turn to Luke chapter 8 this morning, continuing on in our series here in the book of Luke, Who Do You Say That I Am? And looking at who is Jesus and who is he revealing himself to be to us and what do we need to do to respond to that. And so today we're actually going to be in chapter 8, verses 40 through 56. And if you've been following along closely, you'll probably notice that we kind of skipped a section from last week to this week. We're not going to skip it. I'm going to hit that one next week. I just kind of flipped these two because I wanted to hit this one today and the other one next week. So, but today we're going to look at the hope of Jesus here in Luke 8, 40 through 56, okay? So I was reading a story this week about a woman named Amanda Eller, and she had set out for a hike in the Hawaii Forest Reserve one Saturday morning, but as she started on her hike, she realized that she had left her cell phone at home. And so she's not thinking much about it. She's hiking through the forest, and pretty soon she finds herself disoriented, and she starts wandering off of the trail into the dense forest. And as she tried to kind of find her way back, she got more and more and more lost in the forest, and pretty soon couldn't find her way out. And so she's stuck in the forest, and on day four of being lost in this reserve, she ends up falling off of a cliff about 20 feet and breaking her left leg. And then due to mobility issues shortly after that, she ends up losing both of her shoes in a flash flooding incident as it was storming and raining. And so now she's stuck in the forest. She's finding herself exposed to the elements. She's trying to fend off wild animals at night. She's foraging for food and water pretty much on her hands and knees the whole time. And she said that she would spend all day, each day, just listening and looking for somebody that would come and help her. That somebody would come and find her stuck in this place. And finally, on day 17, a helicopter appeared over the top of the forest, and she was indeed rescued. And after she gets out, she said the only thing that kept her going that whole time was the hope that someone was coming for her, that someone was going to come and find her and help her and save her from this situation. And hope like that can be very powerful in our lives. It can oftentimes mean the difference between life and death, whether we really believe that someone's coming to help us. And today we're going to see that kind of hope in this story with Jesus, and we're going to learn that as long as Jesus is coming, hope is never lost. As long as Jesus is coming, hope is never lost. So let's go ahead and look at the scriptures this morning. It's kind of a long story, so we're going to take it in pieces today. Look at verse 40 with me. It says, "Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue. And falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. And as Jesus went, the people pressed around him." First thing we want to see in the story is this. Number one, when you are desperate, hope in Jesus. When you are desperate, hope in Jesus. Starts off as the crowd welcomed him, that they were actually waiting for him. So clearly they knew who Jesus was. They had seen his miracles. They had heard his teaching. We see in this context that Jesus, his reputation is starting to grow. Right? He's starting to get a lot of attention from the people, and he's starting to get a lot of popularity with the people. But what one of the people that shows up in the crowd is this guy named Jairus, who Luke tells us is a ruler of the synagogue, meaning that he was probably an elder or a leader in the local Jewish synagogue there in the town. One of the other gospels shows us that he wasn't just a leader, he was actually in charge of the religious services in the synagogue. He was the one who would plan out the services, and he would prepare everything, and he kind of ran the show, if you will, right? Which gave him great prestige and great prominence in the Jewish community. He would have been a very influential leader, which means he had a lot to lose in this situation. And yet it says he came falling at Jesus' feet and imploring him to come to his house. That would have been way out of pocket for a guy in his position, right? Especially with this unconventional, kind of questionable teacher like Jesus was. And yet here he is, down in the dirt, begging for Jesus' help. Clearly, he was desperate. This is a last-ditch effort for him. And why is he so desperate? Luke tells us right here, because his only daughter, 12 years of age, was dying. Yep. That would do it, right, parents? That's desperate. In moments like these, we will do anything for our kids or for anyone that we love. We're desperate to help them. And so we see a picture here of a man who is willing to risk everything to help his daughter. He's willing to risk his position in the synagogue. He's willing to risk his reputation in the community. He's willing to risk all of his relationships that might push him off and cast him aside because of this. He's willing to risk even being excluded from the synagogue and the practice of his own faith and being connected to his God by associating with this blasphemous heretic named Jesus. But with all that on the line, he still doesn't care. He's like, I'll give it all up if you can just save her. He was desperate. He was desperate for help. And not just any help, right? He didn't just go to anyone. He came to Jesus. Because somewhere along the way, he had faith that Jesus was the only one who could help her at this point. That Jesus was the only one who could save her. And so he's willing to risk it all. And in this very probably moving moment of desperation for Jairus, I love that Luke actually doesn't record any dialogue from Jesus. He just says, Jesus went. That he went to Jairus' house. Yes, it may have been a long shot, maybe, but maybe, just maybe, it actually worked. Jesus was coming. Healing was coming. Hope was coming to Jairus' house that day. But I want you to notice something really important right here. It's not just because Jairus was desperate. Lots of people back then and in our world today find themselves in desperate situations every day. And Jesus doesn't come to all of them. He comes to those who have faith in the midst of their desperation. To those who put their hope in him. He uses desperation, but desperation is just the door. Faith has to walk through it in order to get the hope that Jesus offers. You know, now that we are all finally past the election, and we know we're past it because the incessant election texts have finally stopped. Anybody else, right? Amen, hallelujah. But you know, leading up to the election, and even now past the election, our nation feels desperate, doesn't it? Desperate for leaders who will actually serve our country well. Desperate for a solution to all of the division and disunity that we're feeling. Desperate for answers to all the problems before us at the hands of a government. But that desperation is exactly what has led our country into a pit of despair. Because friends, I'm just telling you this morning, no matter who wins, no matter what side we voted for, government cannot ultimately fix the problem. They just can't. They can do some good things, but they can't fix the problem. And as Christians, we should be desperate to see a change in our country, to see a change in our culture, to see a change in our society. But the difference is we are desperate with faith. And not faith in a president, faith in a king. Not faith. not faith in a nation, but faith in a kingdom that supersedes all of it. Not faith in a government. Faith in God alone, who can save. That is why, even when the results aren't what we hoped for or what we wanted, we have hope, because Jesus is still coming. He's still coming to help us. He's still coming to heal us. He's still coming to save us. He's coming to lead us to our true home. And so we have hope. Without faith, desperation leads to despair. But with faith, it leads to hope. Desperation can actually be a beautiful thing that God uses in our life when we combine it with faith. Because it finally gets us to a place of hope. The story continues, though. Look again at verse 42. It says, as Jesus went, the people pressed around him, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. And though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. And she came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus said, who was it that touched me? When all denied it, Peter said, Master, the crowd surrounds you and are pressing in on you. But Jesus said, someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came, trembling, and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Number two, when it is against all odds, hope in Jesus. When it is against all odds, hope in Jesus. The story goes on as he's going to Jairus' house, that the crowd follows him and the people are pressing around him. The Greek word there for pressing actually means like crushing, like you would crush grapes in a wine press. And so the picture here is of like the rabid press outside the TV courtroom, you know, that's just all pressing in on the scene, or the paparazzi that are hounding the starlet as they're running to their car, like those, that kind of pressing in. That's what's happening here with the crowd and Jesus. But there was one person in the crowd that was different. There was a woman with a discharge of blood, it says, for 12 years. Interesting detail, right? This particular woman in the crowd, she has been suffering with this disease as long as Jairus' daughter has even been alive. It's a lot of suffering. And she had a bleeding disease, which meant several things. Number one, in the Jewish community, it would have meant that she was unclean. And anything and anyone that she touched would be unclean. Which meant for 12 years, she has been an outcast. She has been ostracized. She has been separated from everyone else because no one can be around her or touch her. No one has touched this woman in 12 years. She was unclean. But secondly, because she was sinful. A persistent disease like this in the Jewish community was seen as a judgment from God. It indicated that the person was guilty of ongoing sin in their life, and so she would have been shamed, she would have been despised because of her sinfulness in their minds. But also it meant that she was rejected. Because she was sinful, because she was unclean, she was put out of the synagogue. She was not allowed to worship God. She was not allowed to be a part of the family of God. And so, not only has she been suffering physically for 12 years, she's also been suffering relationally and emotionally and spiritually. Furthermore, Luke tells us she spent all of her living on physicians, but she could not be healed by anyone. Meaning she had tried everything. Every doctor, every treatment, everything that they offered, she tried all of it. She had spent all of her money, and none of it worked. It was no use. So now not only is she sick, but she's also poor and destitute. And the refrain in her brain over and over again is, I will never be well again. It's pointless. There's no hope here. I will never be well again. But then Jesus comes. Jesus comes to town and she sees her opportunity in the midst of the crowd, using the crowd as cover. She comes up behind Jesus and she slips in and she simply touches the edge of his garment. Normally, she could never get close enough to touch Jesus because everybody knew she was unclean and they would never allow that. But she was able to kind of sneak in undetected, and she touches him, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased, and she was healed. Just like that, on the spot. And she can't believe it. And so she just kind of quietly tries to tiptoe out, to not draw attention to herself. But immediately Jesus says, whoa, 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 whoa. Who touched me? Which is kind of a crazy question. In the midst of the paparazzi crowd, right? Which, like Peter says, like, Master, the crowd surrounds you and are pressing in on you. Translation, like, who's not touching you right now, Jesus? Everybody's touching you. Not to mention, this is also the same guy who reads people's minds and answers their thoughts, right? And controls the waves with his voice and raises the dead. Like, surely he already knows who touched him. But he clarifies his question when he says, who touched me? Because power has gone out of me. In other words, this touch was different than the others. Because this touch had faith in it. And he wanted to address that faith. And so he uses this question to draw the woman out. And it says, so when the woman saw that she was not hidden, meaning she knew that he knew exactly who she was, she came trembling and falling down. She's fearful. Like, maybe it wasn't the best idea to slide in and lift a healing off of Jesus, right? Like, maybe that was not the way to go. How's he going to respond? Will he be angry with me? Worse yet, will he take it back? I can't go back to that. I can't go back to that suffering again. What will the other people think? What will they say? What will they do? They know who I am. Or maybe she's just overcome by the awe of his power and his presence in her life. Because the next thing it says, she declared in the presence of all how she had been immediately healed. Whatever fear she did have, it didn't stop her from telling everyone that Jesus' power had changed her life against all odds. And she comes and she proclaims all of this, and then look at Jesus' first word to her. The first thing he says to her is, daughter. Nowhere else in the entire New Testament does Jesus ever call anyone daughter. And in doing so, he is publicly restoring her back into the faith, back into the family of God. No longer is she unclean. No longer is she an outcast. No longer is she outside of the faith. She is now a full daughter of God again. And that is a powerful affirmation, especially on the lips of Jesus. He says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Notice, Not your touch has made you well. Your faith. She wasn't healed by some magical juju on Jesus' robe that she just kind of grazed against it and it jumped on her. She wasn't healed because she mustered up enough courage to come up and touch him. She wasn't healed because she finally suffered enough and God finally gave her a break. She was healed because of her faith in Jesus. And he says, your faith has made you well. And that phrase in the Greek there, made you well, can mean physically, but it can also mean spiritually. And here I think it means both. Jesus did heal her physically, but he also healed her sick heart. Faith had healed her and saved her all in the same moment. And that's why he tells her, lastly, go in peace. Think if you were this woman. Peace. You haven't had peace in 12 years. Nothing about your life has been peaceful. And he tells her, go in peace. And he's not just talking about peace with others, although there was that. He's not just talking about peace with herself, although that was there too. He's talking about the peace that she has now with God. That against all odds, her faith had not only given her peace in this life, but peace for all of eternity. That's what Jesus offers. This is the hope that Jesus offers to all of us. Right? This is us, against all odds. Even though we are broken, wicked sinners, deserving of hell, against all odds, we can have the peace of God in our lives. That's the gospel. That yes, we are sinful and we have rebelled against God and we have broken his law. And yet, out of his grace and his mercy towards us, he sent his own son Jesus to come to live a perfect and sinless life, only to then go to the cross and take our sin upon himself. And die in our place for our sin. And he went into the grave, and 3 days later, he rose back to life, proving that he was God and offering us a chance to be saved, to be healed, to have peace with God. But we have to turn from our sin and put our faith in Jesus. We have to believe that he is coming to heal us. Because that peace that you're looking for, it only comes through faith in Jesus, the hope of the world. I was thinking about this week, and God reminded me last February, actually, a pastor friend of mine in the area, his wife was not feeling well. She was having trouble swallowing and some issues with her throat, and so she went in for some testing, and the results came back with really kind of the worst case scenario. She had stage 4 esophageal cancer, and they immediately traveled down to Houston to seek treatment at MD Anderson and to try to find some way to get this corrected and fixed. And they did all kinds of tests on her, and the immediate prognosis was, it's kind of too late. You're not a candidate for surgery. There's nothing we can really do. You just kind of have to use the time you got. And it seemed like her beating this was going to be against all odds. So they came back, and they were praying, and they went and got some other opinions, and they started some treatments to try to shrink the mass. And through prayers and through treatments, God did shrink the mass, and it got to the place where it was able to be surgically removed. And so she was able to go in and have the surgery many months later, and the surgery went well, and they came out, and afterwards, the message from the doctors was there was no sign of disease left in her body. Now, many of us have enough experience with cancer to know that that's never necessarily a final word, right? There's always more doctor's appointments, there's always more tests, there's always more procedures that happen, and things can change. But for now, this mother of four and young family has hope because God showed them that Jesus can do anything, even against all odds. And that's just one of a thousand stories that we could tell. This church exists as a testimony of God planting a new work against all odds. Against all of my weaknesses and my deficiencies and my mistakes, God did a work here that many would have said, yeah, that's not going to happen. And I could tell story after story from my years of life and ministry to you, of spouses who were lost, and their saved spouse prayed for them for 10, 15, 20 years, and then God finally brought them to faith. I've seen God save marriages that were beyond broken with sin and shame. I've seen God deliver people from what our world labels as lifetime addictions or uncontrollable desires. And now they're living in freedom and in peace with the Lord. This is exactly what the hope of Jesus does. It overcomes all odds in our life. And so faith in Jesus produces hope in the most hopeless situations. Whatever it is that you're walking through that you think, man, there's just no way this is going to turn around. There's no way that this is going to be different. There's no way that this is going to get fixed or healed or helped. I'm just telling you today, through faith in Jesus, hope can overcome all odds in your life. But as much as that was, the story is actually still not over. So look at verse 49. It says, while he was still speaking, Jesus was speaking, someone from the ruler's house came and said, your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher anymore. But Jesus, on hearing this, answered him, and do not fear. Only believe, and she will be well. And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the father and mother of the child. And all were weeping and mourning for her, but he said, do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But taking her by the hand, he called, saying, child, arise, and her spirit returned. And she got up at once. And he directed that something should be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened. Last thing today, number three, when it is too late, hope in Jesus. It says, while Jesus was still speaking to the woman, someone from Jairus' house came up. You remember Jairus, right? He actually started this whole story, right? He's still here. He's still waiting on Jesus to finish up this thing so they can get to his house where his daughter is dying. If I was Jairus, I would be super frustrated right now. Like, Jesus, don't you remember? Like, what we were doing? We were going to help my daughter, like, and we're stuck here with this thing, and you're talking to her. Like, I know she needs help, but she's dealt with this for 12 years. Surely she can wait a couple more hours while we get to my daughter who is on her deathbed. Actually, not on her deathbed. Now it's too late. Your daughter's dead. Don't bother him anymore. It's too late. And in that moment, his heart just drops. He's devastated. But Jesus, hearing this, answered him. I think him is not the messenger. I think him is Jairus, who hasn't spoken again, by the way. Here's Jesus answering someone's thoughts again. And he tells Jairus, do not fear. Only believe, and she will be well. In other words, it's okay. It's okay. I'm still coming. Just keep believing. Just keep trusting in me. I'm not done yet. I'm still coming, and it's never too late when Jesus is coming. And he came to the house, and it says all were weeping and mourning for her. Now the scene here is this. Remember we talked about a couple weeks ago that when in this day and age, and for the Jewish people, they didn't embalm the dead, and so they would bury them very quickly, usually the same day that they died. And so the moment that someone passed away, they would get the professional mourners to come to the house and start mourning before they were to go to the burial. And so things moved really fast. The mourners are on the scene. She's really dead, right? You don't call them until she's truly dead. But then Jesus shows up and he's like, hey, stop weeping. Knock it off. What are y'all doing here? She's not dead. She's just sleeping. And it says they all laughed at him. They're like, this guy. This guy's crazy. Like, this is what we do. Like, this is our whole thing. We're at deathbeds constantly. We know when someone's dead. You haven't even been in the room yet. You just showed up. But he goes in, and it says he took her by the hand, and he called to her, child, arise. And Jesus calls her back to life. And Luke makes sure that we know that she was dead and that he calls her back to life when he says her spirit returned. Some of us, I know you've had some nights where you felt like your spirit had to return the next morning, but this is for real, okay? She was dead. And it says her spirit returned and she got up at once. Sleep here is just a metaphor. Sleep is used oftentimes in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, as a metaphor for death. But he brings her back to life, and we know, and everybody knows, that this is what happened because it says her parents were amazed. You're not amazed when somebody wakes somebody up. Right? That's pretty everyday kind of stuff. And in bringing her back to life, we see here that Jesus cared for her and her parents in the middle of this miracle. Let me point out a couple care things here. This is so cool. First, it says that he takes her by the hand to help her as she's rising from death. He didn't have to do that. We already have seen multiple times. Jesus doesn't have to touch her for her to come back to life. He's caring for her and helping her get up. And then he's like, hey, get this girl some pancakes. Right? Like, I love that Jesus' first thought is like, man, she needs some food. Right? Like, that's great. Because dying's hard work. Right? And she's famished. He's like, get her something to eat. But then most of all, he limits the number of witnesses in the room. Did you catch that? He only allowed three disciples, his top three disciples, himself and the parents in the room. Everybody else is outside. And that's because, and not only did he limit the witnesses, but he also then tells the parents, hey, don't tell anybody. Which is the opposite of what he's been doing in the miracles leading up to this. He's been telling, yeah, tell everybody. Go tell them what God's done in your life. He tells his parents, hey, don't tell anybody. Because he's caring for her, he's caring for this family, and not putting them under undue attention or scrutiny that would actually make their family a spectacle when that's not what they needed. The woman, she needed to be publicly restored. Everybody needed to know that she was clean so she could be reintegrated into the faith family. This family, they didn't need that. They needed privacy so that their daughter could have a normal life. Jesus was caring for them exactly how they needed in the midst of the miracle. all in his love and care for them, he shows them that nothing is beyond the hope of Jesus. No matter how far you've gone, no matter what mistakes you've made, no matter what the outcomes are, no matter what you're having to deal with now because of it, it's never too late for Jesus to help you, to save you, to care for you, to love you. You just have to believe. You just have to believe. And if you believe, you will receive the hope of Jesus in your life. I want to end with just a little bit expanded application here. I can have hope because Jesus cares for me. It's not just that he's powerful. It's not just that he's God. It's not just that he is who he is. It's that he cares for me. That's why hope applies to my heart and my life, because Jesus cares. Three ways. Number one, Jesus' care is specific. It meets you right where you are, right in your need. Whether you're a prominent leader or an unknown child, whether you're a suffering outcast or a desperate parent, whether you're male or female, rich or poor, clean or unclean, it doesn't matter. No matter who you are or what you're struggling with, Jesus cares about you. And he's coming to help you. He's coming to save you. That's why you're here this morning. Because Jesus is calling you to himself. If you'll only put your hope in him. Secondly, Jesus' care is personal. It's tailored to you. It's tailored to your need because Jesus knows you. He knows me. He knows when we're doubting. And he brings reassurance. He knows when we're separated from him by our sin and our struggle, and he comes and he restores us. He knows when we're suffering, and he protects us, and he heals us. Whatever we need, he meets us there with personal, loving care, a care that then fills our hearts with hope again. And then lastly, Jesus' care is powerful. Not only does he have the power to heal and to restore physically, but also the power to save spiritually. And only he has the power to give us hope for all of eternity. We need hope now. We need hope in this life. But even more than that, we need hope that beyond this life, we're going to have a place with God. And so as we're here, our hope continues because we're still waiting. We're still waiting for Jesus to come. And he is coming. And one day he will come and he will take us to be with him forever. And as long as Jesus is coming, hope is never lost. Do you believe that today? Do you have faith like Jairus? Do you have faith like the woman that Jesus is coming? And so no matter what's in front of you, it's going to be okay. Your situation is not too desperate. It's not too late. No matter what you're facing, you can have hope in Jesus. And if you have hope, and if you have faith, he will come and he will save you. That's what he does. Jesus is coming.